This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it's that time of year. We're negotiating both physically and emotionally the transitions of the year, these dark days, the end of the season, coming into the new year. Negotiating our way through the holiday season, such as it is. Rather than bring forward some dharmic teaching, something from the Buddhist teachings, I thought this morning that we could basically just lighten things up a bit, and let's tell stories. So there's many stories from the Zen tradition, and I have a few to share. I have a few personal stories as well, and stories from other traditions. And I would invite you, let's kind of open it up for discussion and sharing right away. So if anyone else has a story, a personal story, a story about their experience in this interesting way of that we have of practicing together, let's do that today. Let's relax and not have any deep thoughts and profound wisdom come forth, but just see what comes up by sharing our stories together at this kind of end of the year time. So I can start with a few stories. If you wouldn't mind, I'll begin with a few stories. I'll start with some of the traditional Zen stories. As you know, there oftentimes a conversation between a student and a teacher or two fellow students together having a conversation. Sometimes they're a conversation, sometimes they're a description, sometimes they come up as just kind of a question. So here's a few of them. Nanquin. Nanquin was a very famous teacher, and he was a few generations before Longzhi, the founder of our tradition. So at one time, Nanquin was up on a mountain, and a monk came by and asked him, "What is the way to Nanquin?" Nanquin was a famous teacher. So, and at that time, visiting students would come and ask, kind of challenge the teacher or ask about his wisdom. And he said, "What is the way to Nanquin?" The master, he was out in the field, harvesting, and Nanquin Nanquan raised his sickle and said, "I bought this sickle for 30 cents. That's the way to Nanquan. And the monk said, "Hey, I'm not asking you about the sickle you bought for 30 cents. What is the way that leads to Nanquan?" The master said, he put his finger on the edge of the sickle and says, "This sickle is very sharp and it only cost me 30 cents. So that's a Zen story. Take what you can from it. Here's another one from let's see. Nanquan, one of his best students was Zhao Zhou, who became a famous teacher in his own right. So Zhao Zhou asked Nanquan, "What is the way?" And Nanquan said, "Ordinary mind is the way." Zhao Zhou said, "Shall I try for that?" Nanquan said, "Well, if you try, you'll miss it." Zhao Zhou said, "Well, how can I know the way if I don't try?" Nanquan said, "This has nothing to do with knowing. Knowing is a kind of illusion, and not knowing is just ignorance. So find the place that's neither knowing or not knowing. Find the place that is neither trying nor not trying, and enter there. It will be vast and bottomless. There's no need to affirm anything. There's no need to deny anything." Now this was a turning point for Zhao Zhou, and after this he got it. He entered the way. So here's one about Zhao Zhou. We just talked about Zhao Zhou. So Zhao Zhou at this time, this is another kind of challenge story. So Zhao Zhou was famous at the time, so a monk came to kind of challenge him or find his wisdom. And a monk came and challenged Zhao Zhou, and he said, "I've been hearing all about the famous Zhao Zhou, about the Zhao Zhou's stone bridge for a long time. And now that I'm here, all I see is a log." Zhao Zhou turned to him and said, "You do see the log, but you do not see the stone bridge." The monk asked, "What is the stone bridge? What is the stone bridge?" I should preface this that at that time, there were donkeys or asses, and they were considered like ignorant beasts, and then horses were considered intelligent beasts. Just, I don't know if it's the same today, but anyway, that was the kind of metaphor in China at the time. So the monk asked, "What is the stone bridge?" And Zhao Zhou said, "It lets asses cross and it lets horses cross. That's the stone bridge." Here's one more of Zhao Zhou. At that time, Zhao Zhou had, besides his assembly in the monastery, he had monks practicing in hermitages around doing individual or solitary retreats in various huts and hermitages. So he went to visit them one day. And so he went to one hermit, and he called out, "Are you there? Are you there?" And the hermit raised his hand to say, "Here I am." And Zhaozhou commented to his attendant. He said, "The water here is too shallow. It can't even dock a boat." And he rattled his sleeves and he left. Then he went to visit another. What's that about, huh? and then he went to another hermitage and visited another monk, and it was the same call. He said, "Are you there? Are you there?" And the monk raised his hand. And Zhaozhou said, You monk, can let go and you can grasp. You can kill and you can let live." And then he made a deep bow to that monk. All they did was raise their hand. So that's some Zen stories. I have other stories, plenty of other stories. Does anyone else want to have a story they want to share or bring forward? Or I could. How about a Sufi story?
Sufi?
Sufi. You mean like the cartoon character?
Sufi? Well, no, Anderson's P. Sufi, I think.
So here's a story from the Sufi tradition. It's kind of a joke. So you can laugh if you want. So a student came to see a teacher, and he said, "Teacher, tell me how to live. I want to learn how to live. Tell me how to live." And the teacher said, "Well, just do what is appropriate." And the student said, "How do I learn to do what is appropriate?" The teacher said, "Duh, through experience." and the student said, "Well, how do I gain experience?" The teacher said, "By doing what is not appropriate." I think there's a teaching in there. Is there a teaching in there?
Yeah, that's good.
I have a couple more Sufi stories. Would you like to hear them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, this one's a little on the gross side, but it's kind of funny. And it's a kind of a good teaching too. So two Sufi guys were sitting around talking, and one Sufi guy said, "I had a dream about both of us last night. The dream I had was that we both had our hands in something. And my hand was in the latrine, and your hand was in a pot of honey." And his friend said, "Oh, I know what that dream means. It means that my teaching, my understanding is golden and sweet, and yours is stinky and doesn't, you know, it isn't good stuff." So, and then the person who had the dream said, "There's also a second part of the dream. In the second part of the dream, You were licking my hand and I was licking yours. Is there a teaching in there? Here's a nice story from the Jewish tradition, Sephardic tradition. Back in Europe, in some town in Europe, there was this tailor, this poor tailor, and he could not, his business was failing. He didn't have enough customers. He couldn't make a living. He was very, very poor. He was very distraught. He could not feed his family, and he could not provide for his family. And he was suffering. He was deeply suffering. And one night, in fitful sleeping, he had a dream, and he dreamed that there was gold. There was gold by a bridge, and he'd never had a dream like this before, and he didn't know what to do. And the only bridge that he knew was the bridge to the castle. Where the aristocrats lived or whatever. And so he went, and he went to the bridge, and he didn't know what to do. He didn't know what to do. So he just sat down by the bridge, and he waited, and he waited, and he waited, and he waited. And he was there so long that he became very familiar to the guard on the bridge. And the guard on the bridge finally struck up a conversation with him and said, why are you here for such a long time, waiting and just waiting? He said, and the poor tailor said, I had this dream that there was gold by a bridge, or there was gold to be found by a bridge. And the guard just laughed and laughed, and he said, oh, that's really, really stupid. You're really crazy to have a dream, to believe in dreams, to be affected by dreams. They're nothing. They're just puffs in the air. They're just, let them go. I had a dream. I had a dream. I just had a dream recently. I had a dream that I was in a house that I'd never been in before. And he described the house. And when he started to describe it, it was the old tailor's house. I was in this house, and I was digging the tiles underneath the hearth. And there was and I found some gold. Isn't that ridiculous? What a stupid story. And so, as you can imagine, the tailor went home, and he dug the tiles underneath his hearth and found this gold that was left probably by a former person there, and he was able to feed his family. So is there a lesson there? Where do you find your treasure?
Yeah, for a story, there was a holy man on a mountain, living on a mountain, and the villagers brought up a young child and said, you fathered this child, you raise it. And the holy man said, is that so? So the child grew up, be a young, beautiful young woman. The villagers came up and said, "We were wrong. You didn't father the child. You don't need to take care of this woman." And the holy man said, "Is that so?"
And he gave the child back to the parents or something?
He was just on his way, wasn't he?
Yeah. That's a good story. I remember that story. Anyone else have a story? Anyone from out there?
Emily.
Tell us your story, Emily.
Hi. My teacher's name is Angie Blissadane, and I had this desire to live in a place that I had to cross three bridges to get to. Speaking of bridges, it reminded me of this story. And this was over 10 years ago, and I was petrified of crossing bridges, the heights, I don't know. All of a sudden, I developed this phobia of crossing bridges. However, I really, really wanted this home that was far, far away up a mountain and over three bridges. And so I spoke to Angie, and she said, "Yeah, I've had that dilemma before." And she said she was in Austria at Vanya's, and it was snowing, and she had to walk to a temple, I think she said, and across a river, and there was a bridge, but it was really narrow, like only one width of your foot wide. And so she wanted to go to that temple really bad. I think maybe Koban's relics were there, she said. I'm not really sure. But she really wanted to go there. And so she attempted this bridge crossing, and she got halfway through the bridge, and the river was flowing really fast underneath her. She got scared. And so she decides maybe she should go back. And so she put one foot behind her and started to get wobbly, and then determined to go forward, and one foot in front of the other, and got there. And that was 10 years ago. And now I live in the home across three bridges, and I have no more fear of going over those bridges. In fact, I sing across them. I give thanks to Angie.
Thank you, Angie.
This is probably a familiar one. A man was being chased by a tiger. He ran up into a berry bush, and he looked up and he saw a tiger above him in the bush. He looked down below and he saw the tiger on the ground waiting for him. So what did he do? He ate berries.
Hopefully they were good berries.
Yeah. And they were delicious, right? They were delicious. They were really delicious. It reminds me of the story, the kind of riddle. Who can untie the bell string from the tiger's neck? Anybody know?
The person who tied it on the tiger?
Exactly. You win.
Would you please repeat what she said?
The answer was the question was who can untie the bell string from the tiger's neck? And she answered, the person who tied the bell string to the tiger's neck. Well, I have a personal story. Once a long, long time ago, in a land far, far away, Koban Chino Roshi sent me to practice with Kedagiri Roshi. I was living on a farm. So I practiced with him in Minneapolis. And originally they had a Zendo. Doug knows this because he was there, right, living right next door. Just an apartment. It had a little, and the living room in the apartment was the Zendo. There was a little alcove to it. And I was doing a sesshin, and I was young, and I was trying really hard. I was like really, really trying hard. I was like trying too hard, maybe, and kind of pushing myself to an extreme. And my place in the Zendo was in this little alcove, and it was a summer day, and it was humid, and the windows were open, and so even though my eyes were cast down on the wall, above me was the window out to the street. And so there I was sitting away with everyone else, and Kedagiri Roshi was there. And I was having a lot of trouble, and I was having pain in my knees, and I was struggling and with the practice. It was tough and at that time. And mostly my eyes were cast down, but I heard some commotion on the street right below me there, and it was a car that had come, and a family was leaving the car, and a young girl, she must have been like, you know, 8 or 7 or something, or maybe younger, I don't know. She let herself out of the back door of the car and closed the door, and the door had caught her dress, her kind of summer dress. And with a kind of real scoldy voice, she said, "Let go." And you know, I guess her mother kind of opened the door or something and released her or something. But she scolded that door and she said, "Let go." And that young girl's scolding voice to the car door saying, "Let go," was a big, big help to me. I can't tell you. After that, my practice relaxed a little bit. I was kinder to myself. I let the tension in my body and in my mind release with my out-breath. I accepted where I was. It was really good for me. She was a good teacher for me. So that's a personal story. So, yeah. You have one? Good.
I don't know. It reminds me of intent. You know, there's been a lot of intent to do something in my life, or I'm thinking of with my friends and my son, we're going to do these things, and something else happens that's totally unexpected. Actually, in the studio, it's a lot like that. You have this intent, and if you just keep working, amazing things come that were not planned. So I share these kind of unplanned things with my, what I see now, experiences with my friends. That's partly why they are my friends, is because we have these things that happen that were totally unexpected. So I have this one story of my son, and that was really great. When I was his age back, I always wanted to skateboard, which I did. I learned how to skateboard, and then I learned that the guy that was really good at skateboard, he knew how to surf, and that's why he skateboarded. But there's no way I was going to go out in the Pacific Ocean out here to learn how to surf. It's freezing. So I got my family long ago to Hawaii. And we went to this place, my son and I, and we saw this place where it looked like, well, maybe we could try surfing because we never did it before. I went to the Walgreens and got one of those styrofoam belly boards. We kind of had, you know, mm-hmm. it's kind of good, you know. So we decided to come back the next day with our belly boards, right? And we get in there and there were surfers there. Because the first day there were no surfers. There were just, this is the first time and only time I've ever gone surfing. But I'm in the belly board. In the belly board, you know, you're basically, you know, your whole body is almost all filled with water, you know, in the bottom and the surface of the water. But the surfboard is this incredible engineered thing. You're sitting, you're actually standing and it's buoyant. It's just like perfectly designed to be able to go on these waves. And there's a Hawaiian guy there, and he's just kind of looking down on us, you know, and we couldn't catch a wave for the life of us. Just a second. So finally, I caught something. I'm like, whoa, I'm going really fast. I'll see you later here. And I'm going really fast. I'm going, and I'm going, and I look down, and my belly board's on top of the surfboard. All the way down. It was like this miraculous thing. First time, only time I went surfing. There was probably a Hawaiian guy way in the back waving. He had lost his surfboard.
You hooked a ride.
There might be a story there.
Yeah. Well, this is deep teaching there. Yeah. Thank you. Anyone? Kavi, do you have something?
I'm like, one really short story. I don't know if Hogan's in Zendo, but I'm in north of New York now, and this morning we're walking with my wife, and I look up and I see this alley going into the Hudson River, and it says Hogan's Place. So I have a picture of myself under Hogan's Place. So that's just one short one. And two days ago, we went to, we took the train to go to my mother-in-law in Brooklyn, but we had to go through Manhattan. And there's a metro, and the metro was packed. There was some disturbed people on the metro, and it scared me in the beginning. There was a black man, young black man. He was not masked. He was playing a ghetto blaster, new style ghetto blaster that I have not seen, that was on the floor next to him. And he was just blasting really nasty word raps, you know, using a derogatory word towards his own race, and F this and F that, F you this and F you that, and I'll kill you and I'll do that. And he was, you know, somehow accidentally, I mean, not accidentally, because the thing was packed. So we had sat just directly across the aisle from him. Nobody was sitting next to him. In the beginning I was afraid, but because my wife had told me, you know, because I usually talk to people, and she goes, you don't talk to people on the metro. You don't, you know, you just keep your eyes down and you don't make yourself a target. But then I gradually started looking at him, and I saw his eyes was closed, and he was smiling. And I was like, well, if I didn't know, I think he's in some meditative bliss or something, because I couldn't tell he was on drugs or not. But anyway, he stayed with me. I tried to do Tonglen for him after I relaxed a little bit away from him. And I don't know, but it made me see, when we stepped out of the thing, that what he was saying is that he's been deeply disrespected. And he was just asking people to respect him and respect his space. So, yeah, that's That's the... I don't know if that was a story, but yeah, you see, so then my, I realized, I'm sorry, it's going on, but I realized New York is a great place to practice. If you practice and if you have ground under you, you see this magical, magical display of things. People, and you can learn to appreciate people where they are. There was a Chinese guy sitting, he was sitting this way, there was a Chinese guy sitting perpendicular to him, just a seat away. The Chinese guy came in and sat there. He was not afraid, and he was looking across at me, and we exchanged a look, and he kind of smiled, and I was like, yeah, I got it, you're not afraid of him. And you're going to hold your ground and you're going to sit there. And I realized the guy is harmless. The black young man was harmless. He was just really sad and angry. And I can't understand why. Sorry.
Thank you. Okay, here's another little Sufi thing. it's about the sun in a cave. So the sun in a cave were having a conversation. And the sun said to the cave, I don't really understand this darkness thing. I don't understand it at all. And the cave said, you know, I don't understand this light thing at all. And they decided, well, let's just change places for a while. And so see what happens. And so the cave went up to the sun, and he said, wow, this is really great. There's so much light, and I can see for a long distance. It's really wonderful. And the sun went into the cave, and he said, gee, I can't tell any difference. Deep wisdom there. Deep wisdom. Once a monk asked the master Long Wa, or Ruji in Japan, how did the ancient master cease to finally do nothing and completely face reality? How did the ancient master face reality and completely settle down? Long Wa said, well, it's like this. It's like a thief slipping into a vacant house to steal something. The burglar breaks into the vacant house and he finds there's nothing there to steal. Not only that, there's no need to escape. Nobody is chasing him. It's just nothing. I like that story. You want to hear another Zen story?
Yes.
There's tons, you know. If you read the literature, there's tons of them. So. Oh, wait. I want to tell you a story from the Christian tradition. So this is Meister Eckhart. This really ties in with Zen teaching. Meister Eckhart's a wonderful, wonderful mystic being. And so he's telling the story of Jesus chasing the merchants out of the temple. You know, I think many of you know that story. So this is Meister Eckhart. He's saying, in today's gospel, we read that the Lord entered the temple and drove out those who were buying and selling there. Those merchants, and he said to those who were offering things for sale, take these things away, remove them at once. Why did Jesus ask them to remove all these things? It's because he wanted the temple to be empty. It was as if he said, this temple is my home. It's where I live. And I wish to have it empty. I wish to have it my domain. I wish it to be empty. And Meister Eckhart went on to say, the temple in which God wants to hold sway according to his will is the human soul. Not a location, but our mind, our being, our soul is formed in his likeness, as we know from his words. He said, let us make beings in our image and in our likeness. So this is the temple. Our minds are the temple. Jesus wanted to keep this temple empty. And that is why he drove out the merchants. Really ties in with Buddhist teachings, doesn't it? We talk about shunyata and emptiness. Well, another Zen story, another little Zen story. Here's one. It's kind of a poem. It goes, the blue mountain is the dear friend to the white cloud. And the white cloud is a very dear friend to the blue mountain. All day long, they are dependent on one another. And all day long, they are completely free of one another. In this way, the white cloud is completely white cloud. And in this way, the blue mountain is completely blue mountain. One more Zen story, and then we'll close. Okay, one more Zen story. Oh, do you have a story?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
It's a true story.
Okay, good. These are all true stories. Merry Christmas. Well, I have a car story too, a personal story. Would you like to hear my car story?
Yeah. Could we?
Well, once upon a time, in a land far, far away, once again, I was in the same place I mentioned before, in Minnesota, practicing with Katagiri Roshi, and I'd done a 7-day sesshin, and I was totally exhausted by the 7-day sesshin. I was just wasted. And I came out of the sesshin, and I was living on a farm. I was like a farm hippie and an organic farmer in Wisconsin. And I had this farm truck that was a flathead Dodge. And it was a really old truck, but I loved it. And I really loved my truck. I seriously loved my truck. And I tried to leave to get back to Wisconsin to my my partner and the two kids and in the farm, and when I started it, the brake lines burst. So I worked on those brake lines for three days straight, buying parts and trying to fix them. But it was all rusted under there. And every time I'd get it fixed and get the brake line pressure up and test them, the brake lines would burst again and burst again. It was like, I was nuts. And I kind of gave up. I just gave up, and I borrowed some money, and I called around, and I found someone who would fix it on the outside of Minneapolis. So I had to drive my truck just using my handbrake, which was like super dangerous, to this gas station way on the outskirts of town to get my brake, and they just redid my whole brake lines. But I was stuck there for a full day, and there was nothing for me to do, and there was no place to go. So basically what I did was, while they worked on the truck, they took care of the truck, and I sat on a pile of old tires that were in back. Very good metaphor. Sat in some old tires in back. And I just sat there like the tailor. I just sat and I waited. And I just sat there. And maybe from the meditation or something, I was very still and I was very quiet. And I was just there. And I looked at what was in front of me, like you taught about the Buddha, looking at what was in front of me. And what was in front of me was the slat fence. And the slat fence was the fence, and then what was behind the fence. So I was seeing the foreground, and I was seeing immediate foreground and deep background at the same time. And I had I had an understanding from that, and I looked at the looking itself, and I realized that the looking was not me. And I turned back from the place of looking at myself, and no one was there. And then my truck was done, and the brakes were wonderful, and I drove back home and to Willa and the kids. And lived happily ever after. One more Zen story. I promise you, one more Zen story before we break for lunch. So this is a nice story, and it ties in with this time of the year, this dark time of the year. So at Denshan, these are two Zen people, Denshan was meeting Lungtang with some preconceived idea. He had some idea about what he was seeing. He had a lot of preconceptions and ideas about what he was seeing. And although he went to see Lungshan to help him see directly, he didn't know why he was going to see him. He thought he was going to see this teacher so the teacher would show him something. He didn't realize he was going to Lungshan in order just to be able to see. So one time he was staying with Lungshan for a while, and he was humbled when he began to see that Lungshan, who Zhang Lungshan really was. He was having a long talk with Lungshan, and Lungshan was a little bit tired, and he said, "Oh, I'm tired. It's time for me to retire. It's very dark out there, and I think you'll need some light to find your way home." So he took a paper lantern, lit it, and handed it to Denshan. As soon as Denshan took the lantern, Lungshan went, and he blew the light out, and the entire world was in pitch darkness. Everything was gone. And at that point, Lungshan dropped himself, and there was a new Denshan. End of story.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.